Chapter 3. The Angels of Retribution. Ultramar. The screen of the visual feed was blank, but the voice of Redlos boomed out across the audio system of the Primarch's chamber. Holguin stood to one side, watching his liege as much as he listened to the transmission. The Primarch sat in his throne, as had become his habit again of late. He listened intently to Redlos's report, features impassive.
There was nothing to be done. The Monarch's glory and 3 corvettes arrived first and detected a battle barge class vessel and 4 escorts in orbit.
Gunfire crackled, and the growl of engines cut intermittently across the voted lieutenant's words. He grunted heavily, presumably swinging his broad-headed axe into some foe.
They tried to bring the enemy to battle, but the traitor vessels fled. I assume they had psykers with them and knew the rest of the fleet was incoming, else why would they retreat when they had more firepower? Augur intercepts mark the enemy vessels as belonging to the World Eaters, with 1 Word-Bearer's ship.
They left the system.
The Lion leaned forward as he asked the question.
There was a delay, followed by muffled shouting and the distinct crack of armor splitting. Redlos hissed a curse.
Headed directly out system and jumped as soon as they could, my liege.
Redlos paused, this time to gather his breath.
Obviously, not all of the traitors left. I will try to keep some for interrogation, but these World Eaters are not making it easy. The navigators have compiled course estimates and rangings. Their best guess is that the ships departed on a course towards Exilla Sigma 18. No other habitable systems within 7 light years.
Best guess, said Holguin, letting slip a sigh.
The Lion pursed his lips in annoyance, but did not say anything.
If Kurz had been here, he is gone now.
The speakers rumbled with the detonation of an explosion close to Redlos, followed by a sudden silence.
Farith!
Holguin kept his voice calm, despite his rising concern.
Brother, what happened?
It was a tense few seconds until the Vox snarled back into life.
Pardons, my liege. It appears the enemy have a vindicator.
The Vox fell quiet again, though the link was still open, leaving Holguin in silence with his lord. Several minutes passed, the thrum of the starship's engines occasionally broken by the thump of some heavy weapon across the Vox link, or the snarl and grunts of Redlos. Brief bursts of static indicated when the voted lieutenant broadcasted on a different channel.
Kurz was never here,
the Lion said eventually, speaking slowly, deep in thought.
He is not a coward. The opposite, in fact. Rash and intemperate. Willing to risk much to prove himself right.
Holguin had warned that the chase to Zephath was likely pointless and had been proven correct. Any statement to that effect would simply be juvenile and certainly not welcomed by his lord. He sought for something conciliatory to say, but was equally aware that platitudes would also earn the Primarch's displeasure. He chose to say nothing. The Vox burst into fresh life with a garbled screech, and then the calm voice of Farith.
"Someone came here," said the Dreadwing officer. "Those ships were not empty. We have only sporadic contact from the surface. There seems to be nothing left of any global command structure. Orbital defences have been totally destroyed."
"There is nothing much we can do here,"
said Holguin. He stepped aside as the Lion moved to the controls. A chart of the 500 worlds appeared on the screen.
"Do we pursue them to Exilla Sigma 18, or look elsewhere?"
"There is something you need to see, my liege, before you make that decision."
A signal interrupted the map projection. In its place, the link panned across a ruined cityscape.
"This is a live feed from a legionary from the Diligent Servant, one of the first to land on Zephath."
The buildings had been constructed from red brick, their facades plastered and painted in bright colours. Piles of rubble, several stories high, were all that was left of most of them, while here and there a stair or chimney still stood, alongside the twisted metal skeletons of taller structures. The ground was heavily cratered. Holguin recognized large areas flattened by orbital attack, but within these were smaller wounds from artillery and gunship strikes.
gratuitous, he said. I don't see how...
He trailed off as the viewpoint moved. The legionary advanced over the mound of a collapsed dwelling, here and there a limb or face jutting from the shattered, charred bricks. It was nothing Holguin had not seen before, and it was not this loss of life that silenced him. Beyond the ruin stood something else. It was difficult to make out at first, obscured by distance, the smoke and dust confusing Holguin's sense of perspective. It was pale, towering over the flattened city. The lion manipulated the controls, and the view expanded to encompass the whole display. Holguin could now see the bright blue flare of jump packs as assault squads crossed the ruins, adding some scale to the edifice. Gunships circled, adding more depth to the image.
It must be half a kilometer high, said Holguin. What is it?
The lion remained silent, eyes narrowed as he watched the unfolding scene. A sudden acceleration, an assisted jump, moved the legionary closer. His companions bounded alongside, their boosted leaps covering 50 meters at a time. Three more jumps, and then the squad came to a halt. The transmission carried no sound from the Vox channel, but it was clear to see that they were perturbed. They exchanged looks with each other, some of them pointing. The view magnified. The lion sucked in a ragged breath between his teeth. The tower was made of skeletons. 1,000, 10,000, 100,000, it was impossible to tell. Skulls dotted the macabre spire, and as the magnification increased again, Holguin could even make out letters made from fingers and the tiny bones found in the ears. He could not read what they said, but he did not need to.
Secure the area for my arrival,
the lion said. His voice, the whisper that Holguin had learned meant his lord, was subduing a deep rage. Up close, the towers were even more disgusting. The stench of dead matter and dried blood carried to the lion on a charnel breeze. Rubble crunched beneath his tread as he approached the grotesque edifice. He looked up, squinting against the bright sun. The fine summer weather made the deathly monuments even more incongruous. In the middle and far distance, other slender ivory fingers jutted towards cloudless indigo skies. This was a landscape that should be shrouded in darkness and storms, not bathed in warm sunlight.
It gets worse, Redloss's voice was flat.
Worse, the lion whispered the word, fingers curling into fists at his sides.
I double-checked our charts from McCrag, said Redloss. This was Antilester, a city of 5 million. They've yet to find anybody alive.
Why? Holguin could think of no other question. This is not conquest. It is slaughter. What purpose could it serve?
Again, you seek reason where none exists. The lion took a deep breath.
But there is another logic at work. Could this be the action of Kurz?
Asked Holguin, unable to draw his eyes from the tower. Redloss led them into the closest structure. The arched gate was high enough for the lion to pass within unhindered. Inside, he discovered what had happened with the rest of the bodies. Skin was pulled taut across the ossuary framework, like the tapestries of Alderuk, still blemished and featured, carefully taken whole from the victims. Mouldering entrails hung like decorations, creating disturbing geometries and curving letter shapes.
No,
said the Primarch, in answer to Redloss's earlier question. His gaze moved around the tower, taking it all in, forcing himself to examine the bloody handiwork of the word-bearers, for surely this was the industry of Lorgar's warriors.
This required much labour. The world-eaters and word-bearers would not do the bidding of Kurz, and he would not wish to command them. He has abandoned even his own legion. A solitary monster now.
The lion's stare became sharper, his thoughts returning to the present.
This, he waved a hand towards their surroundings, this is deliberate, ritualistic. It is not simply horror for its own sake. It served or serves a purpose. We have seen things that defy normal comprehension, Holguin. This is part of that new reality.
If it is not Kurz, and he has not been here, do we pursue the perpetrators, my liege? Asked Redlos.
Have the navigators refined their calculations?
The lion said with a slow nod, the command directed at Holguin.
Best guesses are insufficient.
The voted lieutenant was about to acknowledge the command and depart when a chime sounded from the device he was carrying. Holguin proffered the long-range comm unit to the Primarch.
Stenius, my liege, he said,
handing over the bulky device to the lion in whose palm it fitted perfectly.
Apologies for the intrusion, my liege, said Stenius.
There was a slight delay on the image, so that his lips did not quite move with his voice.
We are receiving contact from the Cull Grievance. Lieutenant Narelin wishes to speak to you directly.
The Cull Grievance? A frigate patrolling orbit over the southern continental archipelago. Interesting,
the lion said after a moment's thought. The commander of a patrol ship was far enough down the chain that it was unusual to request a direct link to the Primarch.
Grant him audience.
Stenius's face disappeared to reveal an image of Narelin on the bridge of his frigate, some distance from the vid capture unit, speaking with one of his subordinates. He turned in surprise as the comms officer called to him. Most of the lieutenant's left cheek and his nose were a messy swirl of old scar tissue.
My liege!
He bowed his head three times in formal greeting, more hurriedly than decorum dictated, so that he appeared to be nodding to himself.
I did not expect to be put through to you so soon. You have my full attention, lieutenant.
The lion suppressed a smile as Narelin momentarily looked like a mouse spotting the diving hawk. The lieutenant rallied in a few seconds, cleared his throat, and gestured to his officer. A second later, an image of a cloudy sky over barren coastline replaced his face.
Our initial patrol detected a strange energy signature in a locale close to the coast of the southern continental mass, my liege.
The display split to show a rough schematic of Zephath's southern oceans, but the lack of clarity of the live visual feed obscured any detail.
I ordered a gunship flyover to see if perhaps it was an outlying settlement or research post. This is what they witnessed.
Through the eye of the picked feed, the lion could just about make out high walls surrounded by a ring of fortified towers, bunkers, and other defences. There appeared to be significant mining and earthworks in the surrounding area, as though someone had been digging for something in the ice-crusted ground.
An abandoned defence fortress, said the Primarch.
Narelin said nothing, and in a few more seconds the reason became clear. Stabs of light and blossoms of explosion seared across the display. The view veered violently as the pilot took evasive action, and then two beams of light, unmistakably las cannons, converged on the gunship. For several seconds, the view spun, the ground rushing up to meet the camera before everything went dark.
Automated defences? No, my liege. Augur data that accompanied the feed confirmed life signals. The fortress has a garrison.
Perhaps Zephathian locals, suggested Holguin. They have been attacked. It would be likely they would mistake our ships for more traitors.
The Zephathian defences were totally crippled, my liege, said Redlos. Despite the madness we've encountered on the surface, legionaries attacked this world. The assault was conducted with ruthless precision.
The traitors are still on Zephath,
the lion growled, a bass noise that reverberated in the pit of Holguin's stomach.
Their ships abandoned them, just like the ones that contested the landing, concluded Redlos. Cowards!
Or hoped to draw our attention away from the planet, countered the lion. We assumed they detected the incoming fleet and feared our numbers. It is possible they thought the first ships were a scouting flotilla and wanted to be pursued, so that Zephath was not subjected to close scrutiny.
They have unfinished business on this world, said Holguin. It has kept them here too long.
A misjudgment they will regret for a short time only, said the Primarch, standing.
He adjusted the comms pack to transmit a multi-channel broadcast.
Stenius! What is the latest tally of the fleet?
17 Vanguard vessels, my liege.
There was a muffled comment from someone else, and Stennius paused while he accessed the latest data.
Correction. We have 18 Vanguard vessels in orbit, 8 main fleet vessels, 4 dedicated transports, and half a dozen ships from the support flotilla.
Have all surface assault-capable ships stand to and await drop orders, Captain.
That's nearly 10,000 Dark Angels, my liege, said Holguin. There cannot be more than a few hundred traitors in that fortress.
Your mathematics skills are exemplary, Holguin.
The Lion returned his attention to the cross-channel display.
Captain Narelin!
The Cull Grievance's commander had witnessed the exchange in respectful silence and took a moment to realize he was being addressed.
It's, Lieutenant! Lieutenant Narelin, my liege, he said,
obviously regretting the need to correct his Primarch.
You are mistaken, Captain, the Lion said.
A massive hand rested on the pommel of the sword at his waist.
I would not give the honor of leading the first drop assault to a lieutenant.
To his credit, Narelin quickly caught up with the Primarch. There was no smile, no look of triumph, just a respectful nod of acceptance.
I will do honor to your decision, my liege,
the newly promoted captain replied solemnly.
You will, said the Primarch.
He marched from the tower and headed back towards his Stormbird, the others following with hurried strides.
Your first duty will be to provide me with all of the strategic data you have gathered so far. Stennius, assemble the fleet for surface assault. Farith, gather the senior commanders. I will brief in one standard hour. Retribution is at hand.
The Lion was true to his word. A stiff wind plucked at his cloak as his gaze followed Captain Narelin's gunships from the open assault ramp of a Stormbird. Most of the traitor stronghold was already rubble and molten slag, the defences levelled in the same manner that had systematically destroyed the cities of Zephath. The last of the plasma warheads rained down, blossoming in miniature suns across the flattened remnant of the fortress. Despite the damage on the surface, it was likely that the bulk of the enemy were sheltered underground. The bombardment had taken out anti-aircraft emplacements and gun towers, but as always, it remained the task of the legionaries to assault the remains. For all that he had honoured Narelin with the Vanguard attack, the Primarch was not willing to take any other risks with the execution of the traitors. As the captain's Thunderhawk touched down ahead, the Primarch leapt from his gunship, dropping the last 50 meters. The glass-like remains of a bunker cracked under his landing, while the jets of the landing Stormbird scattered the fog of ash, coating the Lion's face and hair with light grey. The smell was oddly welcoming, reminding the Primarch of the fire-warmed great halls of Alderaak in winter, save for the slight undercurrent of charred flesh. A breeze came down the mountain valley, bringing a crisp coldness of icy water, coniferous forest, and fresh snow. The Lion looked up and smiled. The cloud layer had been burned away by the vehemence of the lances and plasma fire from orbit, leaving a sun-filled sky. Against the indigo, he could see the shapes of gunships and drop pods. More importantly, so could the survivors of Zephath. They would tell generations to come of the day the Dark Angels arrived as their saviours. The air was thick with the descending machines of war, pinpricks of plasma trails and arrestor jets almost lost against the midday sun. The Lion had chosen noon as the moment vengeance would be exacted. No dusk or dawn assault, but a falling blade lit bright by the light of day.
Ingress, sublevels to the left,
barked Narelin, gesturing to his squads.
Melter teams!
The emplacements beneath the citadel had been well built and had resisted the worst of the orbital assault. As with their initial attack, the traitors had followed the principles of the Legionis Astartes, a strange adjunct to their barbaric genocide. However, a few meters of surface earth had been scoured clear in places, revealing curved ferrocrete tunnels and skeletal ferrite supports. Narelin and 3 legionaries converged over one of these exposed sections. The legionaries carried multi-melters, bulky weapons with short range but devastating potential. At their captain's command, they fired at the revealed tunnel work, the combined blast of high-powered radiation turning the ferrocrete to vapor, leaving a roughly circular hole 3 meters across. The Lion arrived just as Narelin was about to jump into the passageway.
Captain!
Narelin turned as the Lion arrived at his side and drew his sword.
My leash!
There was the slightest tremor in his voice. It was likely excitement, but perhaps concern that the Primarch had changed his mind. The Lion waved the captain to proceed.
Leave none alive.
Bolts whipped past Fareth Redlos as he strode across the broken and melted stones of an internal wall. The heavier scream of Reaper autocannon rounds punctuated the din. The fire came from the slit of a bunker 100 meters ahead, which by some quirk of physics had survived the plasma shells and torpedo attack. It was just one of several defensive emplacements that protected a secondary citadel, itself constructed over one of the mine workings delved into the lower slope of the mountains. The Lion was still clearing the undertunnels of the main fortress, leaving others of the Command Council to sweep clear the remaining surface structures. So far, it had been light work, but Redlos looked up at 8 ranks of reinforced walls and buttressed towers carved from the flank of the mountain. Larger guns added their fire to the defense as the chapters of the 20th, 30th, and 31st orders advanced into range. The thunder of artillery pieces echoed for a few seconds before the shells detonated on the cracked valley floor. Redlos joined Paladin Zarvis of the 20th Order, who observed the stronghold from the corner of a Land Raider's track housing. The black paint of the heavy transport's frontal armor was scratched and pitted from direct hits and scattered shrapnel impacts, the ground around churned with mortar craters. Evidently, Zarvis had been stuck there for several minutes.
Tricky, said Redlos, using the Lascannon sponson mounting to clamber up onto the top of the Land Raider.
The Space Marine managing the heavy bolter at the top hatch turned in surprise.
Aye, and weapon to the enemy, legionary.
While Redlos watched, a squadron of Dark Angels tanks opened fire on the closest line of rampart. A half-formed wall of blue light met the attack. Lasbeams and shells sparked harmlessly against the energy shield a few meters from the fortification.
Any idea how many of them are in there?
He asked Zarvis.
A few dozen, as best we can tell from scan data.
The Paladin shook his head.
Enough to man the stronghold. We could have another 10,000 warriors. It makes no difference if we cannot bring the numbers to bear on the target. It could take days, weeks to dig them out. Voted Lieutenant, I am requesting your Brotherhood's intervention and relinquish authority to your command for the duration of the impending action.
The Dreadwing, like the other wings of the Dark Angels, owed its existence both to the old formations of Terror and that Brotherhood of the Order from Caliban. It existed beneath the structure of the Principia Bellicosa that shaped the Legionis Astartes, a substrate of organization and tradition that predated the adoption of the Order of Caliban and even the amalgamation of the 6 hosts of angels, the Hexagrammaton, but was also a result of both.
Are you sure, brother? Redlos looked down at Zarvis. I will not be gentle with your warriors. Do you wish to consult with our liege?
A swift action will be less costly, I believe. The Lion granted me full tactical command, and I am exercising my right to invoke a Dreadwing assault.
Fine. I just wanted you to be sure.
With a thumb, Redlos signalled for the cupola gunner to clamber out of his position, allowing the voted lieutenant to lower himself down into the Land Raider. He made his way directly to the Vox station and attuned the transmitter to his personal channel, the Dreadwing command frequency.
The glass turns, the grains fall, he broadcast, signalling to the other members of his Brotherhood that the Dreadwing was to assemble. Are you reading me, intolerant?
This is Tarazant, Dreadbringer.
Intolerant is at station 40 Alpha. 2 minutes for orbital adjustment to your position. I need corridor fire 1 kilometer breadth, 2 long. Initiate on my command. Main weapon system will engage on your command.
Acknowledging this, Redlos turned his attention to the other movements of his warriors. From different parts of the battle line, a selection of tanks and squads broke formation and headed towards the land raider. Those fighting below the surface with the Primarch knew better than to disengage. The transmission was a call to arms for those that could respond, not an overriding command. He marched down the compartment and activated the assault ramp. As it lowered, revealing the walls of the enemy fortress blossoming with the muzzle flare of large cannons, he received the affirmation from Tarazant that the Intolerant was in position over the battle zone. Zarvis saluted as they passed on the ramp.
"Don't get carried away," said the commander of the 20th Order. "We might want that fortress ourselves."
"Too late for caveats, Brother Paladin," Redloss replied.
He stepped out onto ground thawed by the engines of the tanks and the detonations of shells. The enemy bombardment was directed a few hundred meters off to his left, where an Aegis line of fortifications had been dropped from orbit. Fire between the company sheltering in the bastion and the outer defenses of the stronghold flickered in the still moments between earth-ripping detonations. Redloss himself did not fully understand the origins of the formation for which he was the elected leader, being a son of Caliban. There had been secrets and mysteries revealed to him by his predecessor, a Terran of Albia called Constantine, but little substantive history. Other details he had gleaned through conversations with his fellow voted lieutenants in the other wings, but even now, less than 2 centuries after its inception, the Dreadwing's past was surprisingly opaque and veiled with metaphor. As the voted lieutenant understood, during the War of Unification, the 6 hosts had each been created by the Emperor for a specific task, or from a particular type of warrior. Their names, if they had any, were unknown to Farith. The wings were an adoption of order terminology. These hosts did not fight alone, being too specialized for general warfare on Terra and during the initial stages of the Great Crusade. Instead, elements of each host were combined into battle groups of different sizes and designations. As and when required, the hosts provided their troops to these armies depending upon the military need. Now the Brotherhoods could be called upon to provide their expertise to a field commander, as Zarvis had invoked. The ground trembled, and a shadow fell across the land raider as a Spartan assault carrier arrived beside Redloss. Its black livery was marked with the icon of the Dark Angels, and in the pommel of the sword of the Legion symbol sat a skull in hourglass device that matched the iconography of the voted lieutenant. The same would be found somewhere in the heraldry of all that belonged to the Dreadwing. The Spartan was a larger cousin of the Land Raider, a massive assault transport capable of carrying 25 space marines. Its tracks were thick with grit and mud torn up from the frozen ground, its exhaust vents steaming like a dragon's maw. Sponson-mounted quad las cannons sent a ripple of fire into a nearby bunker, slashing through the ferrocrete with ruby beams. A hatch in the slab flank opened to reveal Danaeus of the Third Order. The lieutenant ascendant of the Dreadwing wore Terminator armor that almost filled the accessway with its bulk.
"Hail the Dreadbringer,"
Danaeus said formally, taking a step back so that Redloss could pull himself aboard his command vehicle.
"Let the lesson continue," said Redloss, ascending into the massive transport.
The troop compartment was only half full, carrying the 5 warriors of Redloss's pantheon and 5 more Terminators led by Holswain. Each armor-clad warrior sported a heavy weapon of some kind, their livery marked with the icons of 6 different squads from 2 different orders. He sat down, long axe across his lap, and gestured for his second-in-command to stand beside him.
"What do you recall of our last conversation, Danaeus? Tell me of the Hexagrammaton."
"We spoke of the early years on Terra," said Danaeus. "You told me that the warriors of each host could be called upon when a particular threat or situation presented itself. Like now. The leader of a host, chosen by his sect brothers rather than appointed by the Emperor in those times, would assume temporary command of a battle or campaign so that their expertise could be deployed fully. But I do not understand what happened to the Hexagrammaton in the other legions. Why did it persist only within the First?"
That is a mystery I cannot solve," replied Redloss.
"For reasons only he knows, the Emperor chose not to continue with the 6 hosts,
and instead created the Principia Bellicosa to structure the Legiones Astartes. The old ties of the Brotherhoods continued in the First Legion, though, and so the six hosts persisted in name and function. Being created from scratch, the later legions were never built upon this foundation. Redlos was entrusted with strategies and technologies that were for him alone to unleash. Not only did he possess the temporal command, he had been given the spiritual authority to do so. He had learned their ways and means from the hand and lips of Paladin Constantine and passed on the same to his peer-nominated successor, Danaus. Redlos's shadow when the Dreadwing was assembled, it was Danaus's duty to accompany the voted lieutenant and take command the moment Redlos was unable to lead. This last breath protocol ensured no interruptions to the chain of command. Danaus had his own student, Holswain, who would take his place if the lieutenant ascendant died before Farith, and so forth, with each warrior of the inner echelon accompanied by and tutoring his replacement.
"Ready to kill some traitors?" Redlos asked his warriors, rewarded with growled affirmatives and nods. He activated the comnet. "You know me. I know you, brothers of the Dreadwing. We see our target before us. You don't need me to tell you what must be done. We will paint our glory in the blood of the foe. Until the last traitor in that stronghold is dead, this field belongs to the Dreadwing. Tarazant?"
"On station, Dreadbringer."
"Darkness falls,"